That's excellent. So thanks again, Marlene and the team, for leading our time of worship and celebration. It's as we were praying at the beginning, before the beginning of our celebration this morning, it's a wonderful opportunity that we have to gather in such a fashion and know that there is quite detailed things that the Lord wants to give attention to. And I'm a person, I don't know about you, but I'm easily distracted. And when we were... I thought I heard somebody chuckle. It's all right. When they showed the picture of the children in the classroom and the little fella sitting on the floor, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if they rotate that chair, you know, because sitting on that, assumedly, concrete floor wouldn't be too much fun with everybody else. Anyway, I soon got back focused again. Yeah, there it is. So I assume they... do you know if that's Mabufu? Do you know who the teacher is? There's the fellow who comes from Zimbabwe reasonably frequently to Australia. Is it Joseph Mabufu? Anyway, it's an amazing, amazing work. Anyway, that's good. Right. Okay, thanks, Clive. We better pay attention to this really important subject of a small section of the narrative that we used on the induction morning, and I'm focusing on that because we all agreed. All right? And in this particular section we're looking at today, there was this little statement that we agreed to was that I would love you in spite of your failings. That's where I want to focus, on the first bit, not on the other bit that said you would love us in spite of my failings. All right, we'll deal with that later. All right, but this is a really challenging aspect of Christian community, is how do we work in those areas where, particularly culturally, I think, we're very conscious of failings. We tend to focus on the gaps in individuals. I don't know what it is. I understand the psychologists have a wonderful time speculating about the fact that it's all about wanting to be a little bit further up the ladder or something. So we highlight another person's areas of work or the gaps in their identity, whatever it is, in order to make ourselves feel a little bit better. Well, when it comes to a relationship with Jesus, that's not an option. Because we are a people, as it were, beginning to comprehend the unconditional love of God. And the more that we appropriate that, the more that we're going to be looking to people for the purpose of, as it were, to lift them, to edify them. And for those folk who were here a couple of weeks ago, we focused in an area that says we would encourage one another. We would encourage each other in a whole variety of spaces. And if you didn't get that little leaflet that was available last weekend, just remind you that's available through the office. I didn't bring them across this morning. I should have. But that's one of the, I suppose, another of those distinguishing aspects of the Jesus follower is that because we're experiencing unconditional love, we can show unconditional love. Right, so I want to revisit that topic this morning of the unconditional love of God. And I want you to travel with me as we wrestle with the question or engage the point, in what ways is God's love unconditional? Is it totally unconditional? I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but I find myself on that edge consistently. The unconditional love of God. Is this something where we see the love of God just sort of wraps around his creation and he says, you're all okay. Not a problem. You understand what I'm saying there? Or is there something in there that says the unconditional love of God is looking for avenues? Avenues of accessing, of flowing, as it were. You're catching on to where I'm going? I hope you are. Because humanly, we do have a tendency to say, boom, boom, end of matter. God's love is unconditional. or the other option. But I wanted to work with that this morning, and I want to link to both of the passages that we have listened to just a moment ago. Deuteronomy chapter 7. I'm sorry, I'm not responding today, Clyde. Whoops, it's all right. Might not have been connecting. There we go. The unconditional love of God. And we were reminded again this morning through the comments Marlene was making about the fact that God's unconditional love is something that is clearly portrayed into our lives through the life of Christ. And we're beginning to comprehend what that means. But I wanted to just go back a little bit and look at some of the qualities of God's unconditional love. Sorry, Clive, I'm still not moving. Sorry about that. Deuteronomy chapter 7. And introduction, as it were, or a reminder of the fact that when it came to the people of Israel and God's choosing them, he made it very, very clear, right up front. It's not your qualifications. It's not your military skills. It's not your financial attributes. It's not your potential for the future. It's not because you're number 3 draft pick for the Adelaide Crows or whatever. It's nothing to do with that. It's purely God has looking for a starting place. And in his grace, he says, I will begin with you. And so he chose this group of people that had a little bit of connectedness back through history to the way in which God said, I will commit myself to a particular group of people in order that I will reach all of them. Now, I hope you're sort of hearing something that sounds familiar to you, because your calling and my calling to follow Christ is for the purpose that the love of God will reach to the ends of the earth, will reach, will flow into the world that is around us. And so that puts us at the same point, as it were, as this original group of people, that I didn't come to Christ because I had some qualification, that I had my points up, that I had potential for the future, whatever that might look like. It was the grace of God that says, I'm calling you, Peter. I'm choosing you to be a part of this path, of this avenue, this point of access into other people's lives. And that was exactly the same when we get to the new covenant as well. So can we go on? Thanks, Clive. Now, one of the things that's really obvious about the unconditional love of God right from the very beginning is that he signs into it. God actually says, I am committing myself totally to this project, to this purpose, to this plan, to this person, to this people. I am signing myself into their life journey. I don't know if you've thought about that, but that's what the Lord Jesus did when he called you. He signed himself to who you are. He's invested, has invested, and is investing everything of who he is into who you are. Are we beginning to comprehend the unconditional love of God? I trust so. Because in some ways, I get nervous every time we have communion that here I am, I'm saying to God, I'm comprehending your love. I hear you saying you're investing yourself totally into who I am. Thanks, Clive. Way back in that Old Testament context, most of you are familiar with the Ten Commandments, right? Now, I'm not asking you to remember them. I don't want you to tell me what Commandment 5 says. I just want you to hear that that's God saying in bold print, I'm committing myself. That's what he's doing. That's, you know, those tablets of stone with the finger scribing in them wasn't designed to be, oh, that's amazing how God did that. It's God saying, this is bold print. This is myself connecting to who you are, and you won't be able to rub it out. No white ink. No going to another blank format. This is it, scribed in stone. And following that, of course, that came some further detail that God was saying to his people, I just want you to understand how this is going to work. This bold print, you can see I'm drawing you into the relationship, and I want you, there it is, it's right before you, and here's the next bit. Thanks, Clive. Here's the next bit. Now, the outworking of this, my investing myself into who you are, this is what's going to happen. Now, I want you to see this. I want you to understand this. Now, I'm not too sure how many of you are familiar with this occasion where the Lord said, this is the mount of blessing and this is the mount of cursing. He simply said, look, I'm standing before you a choice, an option, and I'm signing into it. You take this path, I will guarantee you. You take that path and there'll be consequences. Now, people say, well, that sounds a bit harsh. But I'm a person, I don't know about you, I don't need 46 options. I still have this little banner here in the chapel. You know, the Lord says, show me your way. And he says, well, Peter, here's option one, here's option two. It's, you know, it's like rigging some of these places, just press button four, whatever. God doesn't work like that. He says, I'm going to help you. You've got two choices. This one I have signed into. I'm investing myself totally into that course. You can take that course. Now you choose, I want you to know, you take that course, I won't be in it. Is that simple? I won't be in it. You'll do life with certain qualities extracted, i.e. the presence of God. So it was very, very clearly that God set before the people, thanks Clive, this direction. It says, follow this one, I'm investing everything of who I am, and out of it will come your identity. And in this case, it was the identity of a nation. You can sort of think, hang on, I'm starting to have hesitations. If God's love is unconditional, why is he so, well, thanks Clive, but just recapping what we've covered over that last little bit there, in the sense that the unconditional love of God says, I'm not requiring qualification. God sees himself investing himself totally into the covenant, into the relationship. He makes clear the details in that relationship, in that covenant, and then he makes those promises. That you take this course, this is what I have prepared for you. It does sound to some people as narrow. So we ask the question, thanks Clive, that's the next one. The next one again, thanks. Are there terms and conditions to this covenant relationship? And in some way, there is. First of all, thanks Clive, is that we see that the love of God is focused. It's directed. It's quite specific. If we quote Augustine again, which we can do, can't we? You know, if there was only one person in the world, I'd hope it was me, but it may have been you. The point being that God says, I would invest myself in you. But we're catching on to the fact that God's unconditional love says, I will invest in myself totally in who you are, with looking behind you to see a whole world of people that I'm actually going to access because of who you are and because of the fact that you're going to travel in this relationship with me. So the next point, thanks Clive, is the fact that built into this presentation that God makes in the old covenant, there was a response mechanism. There was this there was this, I'm placing before you. I want you to choose. So in some ways, the unconditional love is conditional in regards to the response mechanism in you. And the amazing thing is that God puts the response mechanism, it's already in there. You don't have to go scratching around to find it. He says, I'm bringing this to you. And I'm looking for that little response mechanism to go, click, green light, let's go. Thanks, Clive. The other thing is that the Lord says to his people, the response mechanism is connected to the guidelines. Now, it seems like I've suddenly become very, very wealthy and I'm spending a lot of money, but I got a nice new watch. And it's, if you want to have a look at it, it'll cost you because I've got to help repay for the investment. But it's a really, really neat watch. I was a little alarmed the other day. I went to one of the files in my office to discover there's the warranty that's and the guarantee and all that. It's not filled out yet, and there's all these, goodness me, there's words there that say conditions. So as far as looking after this really neat little fancy watch, I need to be aware of how it's meant to operate to make sure that I've got a point of reference in the sense if there's any difficulty with this, I'm going back to the people who made it. And so does the Creator. He says, I've got the covenant, bold print, it's clear what we're on about, here's the details, and I want you to be aware of those because this is the way it's going to work. You might be wondering, when are we ever actually going to get to the Luke 7 passage? Well, we're nearly there because that's the really edgy bit. And when we get there, you may choose to take offense. You may be insulted. You may be a little bit... Anyway, we'll see how we go with it. We'll go on to the next one. Thanks, Clive, because one of the things that became really, really apparent as God was working with these people in the old context, he says, my design was for... You remember what the whole thing was about? I want you to be a people so as I can reach the people. Right? I want you to be a people. I want you to be an avenue. I want you to be the space in which I, you know, who I am, my nature, my character can flow through who you are so that it can then in turn influence, impact those people there. That's the purpose. Right? And again, I'm trusting that sounds familiar to you in regards to why we are called to follow Christ, why the Lord's called us to follow him. Yeah, he's going to transform our lives, he's going to bless our lives, no doubt about it. But he says, really, I just want you to be a part of my heart. I want you to be in that flow, as it were, and reaching into the lives of many, many others. Luke 7, thanks, Clive. This is what's called the woes chapter of Luke's gospel. Called the woes. It's got nothing to do with stopping a horse, by the way. It's actually the Greek term for... I'll come to that. Now, very quickly, can I run through these just every 5 seconds, or 10 seconds, Clive, so I'll just make a comment. Right, this is the lead-up to this conversation. Jesus is out and about. He's out and about for a reason. He wants to contact as many people as possible, want people to hear and see. All right? He's clearly communicating. He's the bold print again. He's speaking clearly into people's lives so they understand who he is and what he's on about. All right? He's in a place where he wants people to know what really is his heart for them. He's accessible. He's out in these geographical locations, not because he's on a guided tour, but because he wants people to know he's accessible. And everything that he does is good. People say, brilliant teaching, brilliant communication. It's amazing what he does. A lot of people's lives touched by the goodness of God. And then we're coming closer to this really pointy bit of the passage where there are people experiencing deliverance. We'll pause there. Thanks, Clive. We get to this point now in Luke's narrative. Now, I've probably gone too fast to get a perfect match between the old and the new, but there is. Clearly, God is wanting to communicate to these people, is investing himself in the relationship and all those things. And here's Jesus doing exactly the same thing in person. It's now clearly, in the Old Testament, it was still there, it was relational, but here we can see it's personal, it's relational, what God is on about. And we get to this point where Jesus now starts to interact with people who are a specific part of the community, a specific part of God's people, their leaders amongst God's people, and he's now starting to interact quite specifically with them. And here's our little bit in the narrative. I'll just try and make you ready for this big leap? You remember where we started? My challenge, your challenge, is to love you in spite of your failings, my failings. I'm still looking for those, but you might like to highlight them for me. By the way, no shortcuts, no asking Margie. You work them out for yourself. All right? So we have this, how does the unconditional love of God deal with aspects of our life that are clearly shortfalls? How does he do it? Now, I have to say straight away, I've probably gone in the deep end because this is the most dramatic occasion in which Jesus does it. There's lots of occasions where Jesus does very graciously, very gently confront. He deals with failings in a person's life without judgmentalism, which is amazing. Anyway, so the situation here is he's dealing with religious leaders. His conversation has been moving around the fact that they're starting to challenge what he's doing. They're challenging the integrity of his claims. They're starting to challenge the direction of his ministry and just how much people are responding and all that sort of stuff. And now there comes an opportunity for Jesus actually to put the spotlight, so to speak, of God's unconditional love, put the spotlight on what is clearly a failing in the life of these leaders. And you could say he does it very graciously. You could say that. You can say that. But he illustrates how grace is not soft, love is not compromising. He's ready to highlight, for very specific purpose, what these failings are. Now, I hope you're still traveling with me, appreciating the timeline that's involved. All right? So the situation which Graham read for us. It was Graham, wasn't it? Yeah, good. The situation is the conversation between the religious leaders and Jesus has now got to a very interesting point, to the point that one of the leaders is indicating, we're going to take this conversation further. I want you to come to my place, and I'm going to get a whole bunch of the other heavies. They're going to join us, and we're going to sit down, and we're going to have a meal, and we're going to take this conversation a little bit further. Of course, one group has got a particular motive. The other person has also got an agenda. Jesus is going to, as it were, put the spotlight of God's unconditional love on the lives of these leaders. So what happens? Well, Clive can give us a hint. This is the hint. You know, and we saw it tonight, this morning, you know, all the kids lined up. Hot lunch? Obviously not. Wash your hands, Jeffrey, with the salve, old Jeffrey. You know, where is Jeffrey? Oh, Jeffrey, yes, all the time, especially if you go, you know, if your hands are going there, wash your hands real good. All right? So the point being, on this occasion, is that Jesus doesn't do it. Now, I'm thinking to myself, why didn't Jesus do that? He would have been familiar. His Jewish background would have been quite aware of what needed to happen. Did he deliberately not do it? I don't know. But as would often happen, in that context, the legal eagles, they picked that up very, very quickly. Hey, hang on, Jesus. Why didn't you wash your hands? Now, I'm not sure how you heard the narrative this morning.